And for example, a connector, you can go with the official Molex connector, or you can go with a connector that is from some local brand that is one third the price. And yeah, if you're making 10,000 of them, then it becomes useful to know that these kind of alternatives are there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. My name is Zach Peterson. I'm your host. And today we're going to be talking with Case Engelin, founder and CEO of Titoma. Case is someone who I've followed on LinkedIn for a while, and I'm very happy to have him here on the podcast. Case, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here, Zach. We're a great fan of your work.
Oh, well, thank you. We try not to bring up my work on this podcast. I like to bring up the guests' work a little
We're
bit more.
We're a great
than my
fan
own.
Of Altium as well. It's definitely our favorite tool.
Well, Altium is pretty great. That's why we're here today. But I think for the moment, maybe you could introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a bit more about Titoma.
Yeah, okay. So I'm from the Netherlands originally, but I moved to Taiwan about 25 years ago and first worked in industrial design. But about 20 years ago, I started Titoma, which stands for Time to Market. And basically, we help Western clients to do the complete design, engineering, prototyping, certification, all the way to manufacturing of electronic products. And we focus on embedded products in general.
So how long ago did you found Titoma?
It's about 20, 21 years.
And originally founded in Taiwan as like a contract manufacturer?
Yeah, so we're a bit like a niche ODM. So we do both the design and the manufacturing.
So I'm sure working in Taiwan for that amount of time, you've had a chance to see how the landscape for electronics manufacturing has evolved over that time period.
Well, yeah, the biggest change has been that over the years, a lot of manufacturing went to China, and a lot of my friends were saying, "Why you're still in Taiwan?" And I've worked a bit. I've worked in Shanghai. I've worked a bit in Dongguan and other places. But I still always preferred living and working in Taiwan. And now actually the whole trend is reversing a bit, and a lot of production is coming back to Taiwan again.
That's interesting because in that debate about onshoring versus offshoring and geographic diversification of production, I think a lot of folks are saying it should come back to the United States, Europe, maybe a bit more onshored. And then others are talking about greater capacity in other areas of Southeast Asia, and then even some areas like Central America. And then in India, there's actually a lot of investment.
Yeah,
so I'm seeing a lot of the broadening of the production base.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, final assembly you can do in Timbuktu or wherever is convenient for you. But for me, the core, especially for electronics, is the components. Because if you look at the total cost of a product, electronic components, be it resistors and ICs, but also displays and cable trees and sensors, all of that for a very large part still comes from China, and that will actually continue to do so for the next, I'd say, 5 years at least, and probably longer because of its humongous installed base. And so, yeah, you can do final assembly somewhere else, and that makes sense. First, for tax reasons, import taxes, and having more control over being closer to the final process. But you need to be very good at getting all those components to work together nicely, play nicely together. And that is easiest done where they all come from. Because if you're shipping a whole container full of displays to Utah and then try to assemble them there and there's an issue, then you have to send them all the way back. Whereas in Shenzhen, you just send them down the road and next day you got them all fixed back together again. So that makes a big difference.
That's funny you bring up shipping it all the way to Utah and then having to, pack it up and ship it back if there's a problem. I think we kind of take it for granted that if we're going to get a component, like whether it's a display or some other, subcomponent or a module, whatever it is, that if it's sold on the open market, then it should work. And so I don't ever think we, plan for the need to send back a big batch of components. So, how many of those supply chain considerations are built into that choice to produce closer to where the components are? Is it really just a time to market and being able to return components if needed, or are there other considerations?
Yeah, there's well, you have all your DFM considerations, but it's true that shipping becomes an increasingly bigger part of that. And yeah, if you're assembling right in the middle of all these component factories, that's the easiest thing, obviously, especially in the design stage. I mean, when you're just developing a product, you don't really know which display or which sensor you're gonna end up using. You're testing out different options for value for money, and it also depends on which factory is most helpful in doing a bit of customization, modifications, and that all. And what the fantastic thing of the Greater China ecosystem is that there's, yeah, within an hour drive, there's 10 different alternatives. And that means that everybody is ferociously competitive, service is really fast, prices are very affordable. And yeah, that's what people call the China time of development. Mold making in China tends to be done in 5 weeks or so. And in the US it can be, or in Europe it can be a lot longer. So my take now for it is do the first generation, your first production run in China, get all the components together, make sure everything is mature, and then you can ship it to wherever makes most sense for you in terms of tariffs or other considerations.
I think with prototyping, this is another thing that we take for granted because with prototyping, maybe you're doing a small run and the assembly costs and even the board fab costs are sometimes a much more significant portion of that prototype cost than just the cost of your little display module. And so we don't really worry so much about what happens if you have to, ship it from China over to the US and you get it assembled locally and then you test out your prototype. But what you brought up here, I think, is pretty important for companies who are planning to produce at thousands or tens of thousands of units, which is once they go to scale, where are they going to produce that so that they can do this in an affordable way and get their Gen 1 product out there so that it's competitive?
And so what is important is also that a lot of the components in China are not necessarily on DigiKey. So and the way we personally do it is that we make a first prototype of a product, get it to work, and then we share a BOM with our factory partners in China, and they will suggest us a lot of alternative components. And for example, a connector, you can go with the official Molex connector, or you can go with a connector that is from some local brand that is one third the price. And yeah, if you're making 10,000 of them, then it becomes useful to know that these kind of alternatives are there.
I think a lot of folks who are costing out that path to scaling don't know about all of those alternatives that are out there, because it is tempting to just go to Mouser, go to DigiKey, and look at what the volume price breaks are and plan out your production around that way. But it almost sounds like I could put together a bill of materials, give it to someone like yourself. You can shop it around to the folks that you know overseas. And they could line by line go down and say, well, you know, we can give you A, B, and C options at half, a third, a quarter of the price.
Well, not always, but of course, connectors are a very good item. But there are certainly a lot of advantages to be had. And the interesting thing is that the cost structure also depends on which factory you're talking to. Because a certain factory may get, at the end of the year, if they do make their target and they do sell or buy 10 million connectors, then they get an additional 20% off. And that is something that you're not going to see on DigiKey. But this factory is going to be very motivated to persuade you to spec that particular connector. And they will share the revenue with their clients because they need to make their target. And so I once had a client I talked to, and they said, well, we first want to do the DFM in Canada because we were working with Jabil and they have a plant in Canada. And then once it's done there, we're going to move it to China. But that doesn't really work, because DFM is not something that is a universal truth. It's very much optimizing for a specific factory and its specific supply chain around it. And the way they like to do things in Vancouver is very different from doing it in Shenzhen or in Taipei. And so if you're optimizing that DFM for Vancouver, then you're optimizing for the way cables are made in Vancouver, and you're optimizing the way molds are made in Vancouver. And every factory has their own little thingies and hang-ups from the past. Oh, I'm never going to do that again. So we always use this component. And yeah, these are just the intricacies that you really need to involve your factory as early on in the process as possible. Well, no, I want to correct that. You should iterate your prototypes until you have what you really feel that does what you needed to do. But then you should get your factory involved and before you go over the endless final fine-tuning.
That's really interesting, because when we talk DFM a lot, whether it's in, you know, webinars or design guides or whatever for PCBs, I think we focus a lot on fabrication. And then we say, you know, get your fabricator's capabilities so you don't, you know, like put vias too close together. You don't violate their line width and spacing rules and things like that. And I think that makes sense. And it's a little easier to translate one design from one factory to another, but you're bringing up a whole other set of product development issues. You know, you brought up cables, so I'm going to assume, you know, cables and harnesses is what you would be referring to there. What other considerations are there that could really derail you?
There's lots of details on. I mean, you know how many details there are on just PCB fabrication. On cable length fabrication and for example, one factory will work in an assembly line, and other ones they do a more modular fashion where they do first do those modules, and then next day they do that step in the process, and maybe the length of your cable will have an influence on that. And yeah, for every step in the process or every component that you use, there are considerations that you need to check. And basically, you know how you have tolerance stackups? The final assembly, that is where all the tolerances on all the 256 components, be they plastic or metal or PCB or electronic components, where all this display comes together. So that's where a lot of fun goes on.
Yeah, that's really interesting because the designs that I work with, I'll be honest, when it comes time to scale, we hand them off to a partner that is kind of like yourself. And once the design has been prototyped and tested and perfected, we kind of step back once that cost optimization in the design is finished, and they're handling a lot of these things with enclosure and cables and connectors and procurement and all of this. And so we don't I don't really see that end of it. So, this is really illuminating to know that, the factory that you're going to work with could have these kinds of assembly issues that span beyond just what goes on in the PCB.
But it also the first step really is your component architecture. Like, are you going to spec a camera from DigiKey, or are you going to talk with your factory who knows a camera that is has the same performance, but is a lot cheaper? And that is something you really should decide very early on, because you're going to spend months optimizing your firmware for your camera performance, and you don't want to optimize in the wrong direction, right?
No, I agree with you, certainly. And having that visibility early into what the options are, I think is very important. So I'm wondering, if someone is planning out, this system architecture and they want to do just what you said, which is get all of those camera options that might not be out there on, DigiKey, how do they find all of that so they at least have a short list of what some of the best options will be before they go to an ODM like Titoma, or before they just go to a design firm?
Talk to us. That's always good. I mean,
Well,
for cameras,
of course, but I'm saying just like some of the front end research, what can someone do?
Well, there are a lot of websites, of course, also on Chinese components, like Taobao is a very well-known one, and there are other Chinese websites. They only don't always have an English interface, but with Google Translate, you can get the gist of most of it very quickly. So yeah, you can for the key components, you absolutely should do that research really early on. But to be honest, I don't do that kind of research that much. You really should talk with our CTO Leo, who can tell you a lot more about that maybe in the next episode. But in general, for the more obscure components, we are very lucky with the partner we have in China. They have this whole circle of old friends that they know from university, and they have this WeChat group. There's about 150 of them, and anytime somebody needs some obscure this or that or magnets or whatever, you don't want to buy it from Taobao or from Alibaba or something, because on Alibaba there's some you don't know really whether the factory or if they're any good. You want to
Maybe it's
buy
totally
from
counterfeit.
possible too. Yes, especially with components, there's been such a hype recently, and there's been such a coming down now. Everything is easing up a lot. So what they're doing is they're talking to their friends. Does anybody know a good supplier for this or that specific component? And then they come with a recommended supplier, and that is the old Guangxi network, and it sounds very corny, And to be honest, to be very honest, we have a really good relation with our factory. We've been working with them for 8 years, and I have had lunch with the factory boss 3 times in 8 years. So I've never gotten drunk. I've never did karaoke with him or all that stuff. We just have a very good working relationship. So in that sense, you don't need the mystical guanxi, but for this kind of thing, it's very, very useful.
That's so interesting. They'll send out a component request and somebody says, "Oh, hey, we can make it," or, "We have it," or, "I know a guy who can get it for you." And they figure it out and they manage to sell it to each other or buy it or get it to you. At some point, it gets to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, once a supplier comes recommended, it's sort of like somebody vouches for him, and when you screw up with him, then you get problems with that guy. So that does help to keep everybody honest.
That's such an interesting way of doing business, because we focus so much on having a digital presence here in the US and making everything searchable so that it's really easy to find those types of suppliers without having to go to this kind of exclusive group. So I'm a little surprised to hear that this kind of thing exists.
Well, there's another thing. A lot of factories, they are not so keen on dealing with pesky foreigners asking lots of difficult questions and wanting support and all that. And if you
They
look
just
at,
want to sell the stuff and move on.
well, they want to sell it by the boatload. They want to sell 1 million and. But I mean, if you look at IC suppliers like Broadcom or something, you have to sign an agreement. I will never, ever, ever ask for any support whatsoever before they will sell to you. And so and for some products, you much better off buying them via factory than trying as a smaller. I mean, we typically build in 5K, 10K batches, and for a lot of or component factories, yeah, we're not gonna discuss with them directly. But if you're talking, for example, about Ambarella camera modules, very high end, very good, but there are only two design houses in the world that are Ambarella approved, and yeah, it cost about $500,000 to $1 million to get them to do something for you. But a more economical way is to work with a factory that is already established with Ambarella and that has their tweaking equipment in place. And that already has a buying purchasing volume with Ambarella. And that's the way the big component suppliers actually prefer it. They don't want to deal with all the small pesky question askers. They want to deal with a couple of big factories who know their stuff, and only the very difficult questions get passed up to a higher level.
I wonder how much this reflects the production environment overseas versus like here in the US, because I can go on to DigiKey and I can order a single resistor if I really want to, a 2 cent resistor, and pay the $27 shipping charge or whatever, and have that one resistor shipped to me. No
Sure,
way,
sure,
it
sure.
sounds like.
No, but it gets difficult when you want support. That's where it gets
Well,
difficult.
sure. No, I understand that. My best case would be to go to the manufacturer of that one resistor, and maybe they have a forum where I can ask a question from another user, or maybe they have a knowledge base where I can, search, and maybe I'll find the response that I'm looking for. But it sounds like because so much production overseas is higher volume, that they only want to deal with high volume people. They don't want
Yeah,
to deal
correct.
with the person that wants one camera module.
And so I mean, if you're making capacitors or resistors or little doodads, there's more than enough demand dealing with the 200 large factories, and for them it just doesn't make much sense to translate everything into bad English and then put it on a website somewhere, because you're only going to get more questions from all these English speaking people. And they a lot of them just prefer to keep it for the local, and that's where the big factories are.
Interesting. Okay. That's really revealing as far as the supply chain environment in China, because it seems, I'll be honest, it's something I'm not familiar with. I've never had to deal with those kind of folks in China.
Yeah. But if you look at Apple, for example, they used to spend months in China to optimize the DFM for their devices on the line in China to really, there's so much DFM optimization that needs to be done. And it's the basic design is done in California, but nearly all the design optimization DFM is done in China in combination with all the engineers there.
Well, I know that with this debate around geographic diversification, whether it's Southeast Asia or somewhere else, the supply chain environment has to be able to support that. So if someone were to go to Mexico or South America, what is the supply chain environment going to look like? Are we going to have that same kind of ecosystem of component distributors and manufacturers to draw from? Or is this going to be another situation where somebody has to order it all from DigiKey, ship it over to wherever the factory is, pay the tariffs and customs duties, that kind of thing? What does that ecosystem look like?
Well, we are now starting manufacturing in Colombia, actually. We have about 40 engineers there now, and we have done some first batches, and it's actually going very well. And it's a bit of an unusual country for electronic assembly, but yeah, very bright people. The big thing with logistics is the famous one missing component that you and the line stops, right? So what we're going to do is just make sure that everything works fine where it is assembled now, and then ship everything as a kit to wherever you want to do the final assembly. I think, especially in the beginning, that is the safest option, and it's also the most cost-effective option. And in many countries, I don't know how many display makers there are in the US. I don't think an awful lot, and certainly not in Latin America. And so you still are going to need quite a lot of components to continue to come from China. And I prefer to import them just as one complete kit from there.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Given that any type of investment in, whether it's, you know, PCB production and assembly or component production, is a long-term investment, what are the growth prospects looking like in a place like Colombia?
Well, we are very optimistic there because, a lot of people are saying, can you manufacture anywhere else but in China? And we've moved quite a few products to Taiwan and do final assembly there, and that is of course the easiest way because it's so close to China, and that is also if something is missing, or for example some housings are not correct or something else, you can get a very good, quick follow-up. But once it gets more mature, then we can look at further away options. And Taiwan is a very nice place, but it's still a bit more expensive than China. Whereas in Colombia, we're getting quite close to China cost levels. So that's very encouraging.
So
Did I
clearly,
answer
no,
everything
I,
correctly, or?
well, I think so, but I have a follow-on to that. So, I mean, clearly, people are responsive to the idea of producing outside of Asia. And I guess what I'm wondering next is, given the ecosystem that is available to you in China, and it is clear that there is some value to that, what are some of the biggest value adds for going outside of Asia? And you mentioned cost as one of them. So costs are getting more competitive compared to Taiwan. But what are some of the other value adds?
Of us as a firm, or
Well, you guys as a firm or in general.
well, our type of clients are mostly people who just say, we make software, or we make glue, or we make something else, and we want to focus on doing the marketing, and you guys do all that hardware stuff. And so we are an end-to-end solution. You start with the beginning in mind, which is the components. And like I said, for the next 5 or 10 years, I do think that China's position in components is gonna be very important. So we will continue to be working closely there. But yeah, another thing is that by working in different time zones, like in Latin America, Colombia, we can work with our clients in California very easily in the same time zone. So that's where we do our firmware and hardware design. And in Asia, we do a little bit of electronics as well, but mostly more on the housing and the logistics. Working with the mold makers, doing all the prototypes, that kind of stuff.
One of the, I think, challenges of moving somewhere like the US or Colombia or even elsewhere in Asia is access to some of the most advanced capabilities. And when I say capabilities, I'm talking more about board fabrication. Have you guys been able to bring some of the more cutting edge capabilities over to Colombia? Or is that something where if you needed to do, let's say, multiple HDI buildup, you would work with a partner in China?
Yeah, to be honest, like right now we're looking for a 10-layer Roger PCB, and that is hard to source. I mean, we have one candidate now in Italy and one in Taiwan, but it's hard anywhere, and we certainly don't find that kind of capability in Colombia. So anything that is difficult, we're gonna get where we can find it, and anything that is easier and voluminous, like plastic housings, packaging, carton, all that, we're gonna source local as quickly as possible.
Well, in terms of the PCB fabrication, I'm hearing a little bit of a bifurcation, and this is something that some industry groups in the US have talked about repeatedly. So, we've talked to folks from PCBAA, and we've talked to folks from IPC, and that the bifurcation in the type of products that you produce locally versus overseas requires that you bring some of those more advanced capabilities locally. And it sounds like we're still behind on that. And I'm wondering, what it would take to be able to build up that capability so that way you didn't have to go to China if, let's say, you weren't allowed to. Let's say it was, covered under ITAR for an American client, or you wouldn't have to go to Italy where maybe the cost becomes untenable.
Well, one of the things that determines the country of origin For example, for one client, we must do the PCB assembly in Taiwan, and then the importation laws determine that the brain has been done in Taiwan, so it's made in Taiwan. And even though the housings and the display and the this and the that come from China, the brain is there, final assembly is there, so it's made in Taiwan. And yeah, if high-end PCBs can only be done in China, then it's going to be a lot harder to make it count as made in the US. You really need to justify adding enough value in the US in terms of other components and so on. But that's, yeah, you have a whole specimen of lawyers that focus on that. But what is interesting, we are now working on a product that is, it's a specific LED. It has a harmonized importation code that classifies it as a LED module. And recently there's been some changes, and that means 25% import tax. That's quite a bit of money. And so now we're doing the next generation, a similar product. And by making the LED removable, it's no longer the a module, it's a lamp. It's an LED lamp with a removable module. And then the tariff goes from 25 to 2%. So now we're doing design for import tax. So that is it's a new category that we didn't have yet. One other category is design for Amazon. We designed seriously.
Come on,
seriously, something we did wrong. We designed a dog feeder, and client said, "I have these big Labradors, and I'm using dog feeders, but they want to get to the food, so they go wah, 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 and they get the food right." So it has to be Labrador proof. So we designed something that was very wide and about 80 centimeters wide and Labrador proof, unturnovable. And great, people were very happy with it. But then later copycats came out with also automated dog feeders with built-in webcam, but they were this small. And it's a lot cheaper to ship on Amazon if it's this small than if it's this wide. You get into very high rates. So design for Amazon, that's another one on the list.
Yeah, normally DFA is design for assembly, so yeah. Maybe DFA can start to also mean design for Amazon and design for import tax. I would have never thought that. I guess we're just adding to the DFX acronyms here. That's so funny. So what do you think is convincing companies to broaden out their production base and their supply chain geographically? I mean, COVID, I think, was a big, wake-up call just in terms of the demand shock that all of the later stimulus produced. And it's, kind of woken everyone up to the fact that, hey, maybe 50% production in one part of the world doesn't make the most sense. So I think that's part of it, but I'm sure there are other factors at play that customers care about. So what are some of those factors? Do they discuss that with you?
Well, there are some companies, especially if they're security or government related, or like we're making tracking bracelets that go into the prison system, and they. Recently, China has not done much to make itself more popular in the West, and so there's some concerns about those type of products now, the handling of the whole COVID, the supply chain disruptions that has been
the zero COVID policy.
Yeah. That took, it went on for quite a long while. And, Yeah, that has I think a lot of people began to doubt a little whether because China has always been very pro-business, and the zero COVID policy seemed to be more of a personal yeah, this is my dogma kind of issue, and yeah, to the detriment of the whole economy. And that made a lot of people pause a bit, I think. But yeah, they've now reversed that stance, luckily. And yeah, things are getting back on their feet. So that's getting a bit better.
So, given the challenges in the supply chain internationally, what does the future of electronics production and sourcing and procurement look like? Are more companies going to have a broader footprint and consider some of these options in other areas? One of the things that the 3D printing industry has always tried to tout as a value add is that you can produce closer to your customers. Is that going to be the big value add for electronics, let's say OEMs or any other company that needs to produce something? They're going to look broader internationally so that they can produce closer to their customer as long as the supply chain can support that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in Japan they always wanted to do just in time because nobody likes stock, right? So nobody likes to sit on towers of inventory because it's a lot of cash that you have to lock in there. Yeah, I'm not so sure. Another thing is you. For a big multinational like Samsung, it's quite easy to set up a plant in India or wherever they want to be, because they're gonna have about 20 key suppliers that they just say, hey, we're gonna be in India, we're gonna start next year, and if you guys want to continue to supply, that's where you need to have your plant, and it needs to be within our industrial park, basically. And okay, Samsung, million units of a week, sure, they go and do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, when Samsung or Apple says jump, you say how high?
But the thing is, if you're more of a little guy and like us, and you're doing 3 or 5K a month, you're not going to get all those suppliers to come to India. And yeah, the most obvious strategy still is go where the suppliers are.
I think that's great advice. And hopefully, anyone who is looking for that advice on navigating the overseas supply chain and production environment, they can come to you. So we'll have some links in the show notes where folks can get in contact with you, if that's all right. All right. That would be great. Thank you so much for coming on today. We've been talking with Case Engelin, founder and CEO of Titoma. Make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. You'll be able to keep up with all of our episodes and tutorials as they come out. And of course, if you have any comments or questions, make sure to leave them in the comments section. And finally, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time.